Just like a blind man, I wandered along. Worries and fears I claimed for my own. Then like the blind man, the dark gave back his sight. Praise the Lord, I saw the light.
The following Sunday, I went to church. Mother wouldn't go. I promised your father that I wouldn't set foot in a church until I was coming to rest with him, she said. Which is a blatant lie. She's been to any number of weddings and christenings since he died. Alan wasn't keen either, but eventually he gave in when I told him we had to make a minimum of 6 appearances before they would wed us, which surprised him because he was under the impression that we were going to the registry, an idea I soon put to flight. We are doing this properly, or not at all, I told him. I'm not having people think that I'm ashamed to show my face. And I might be the wrong side of 30, but it's my first time, and I want people to understand it's my last. I knew Alan would see things my way in the end. Though his final riposte about the extra cost of a church wedding was not something I appreciated, especially as I'd already saved him the best part of 20 quid by not having tea at Betty's. Then he made matters worse by suggesting that we might combine the wedding with the honeymoon by going to the Caribbean, which in my opinion is tantamount to an admission that you have no friends, or that you're frightened of the Mr. Rochester moment. No, I want things done right. He seemed to get the message. I suppose it's something that a man can't understand, he said. It's my special day, I said, and the poor love squeezed my hand. The first obstacle at the church was the steps. I had thought there might be a ramp, but it seems they spent the money on new vestments for the choir. Or at least this was the excuse the vicar gave as he led the way round to the side door. This was not the welcome I had hoped for, the implication being that I was some kind of heathen unfit to enter with the holy. Of course, I held my tongue, not least because Father Timothy sounded a very nice man, and I'm not one to complain, really, I'm not. I felt sorry for poor Alan. He had to push me through the choir stalls. The poor lamb was dressed in his best suit, and I imagine we looked a comical sight. No sooner had he parked me at the end of the pew than I heard a familiar voice. "We don't see you here much," she said. I recognised at once the chainsaw rasp of Mrs. Number 21. "There's a first time for everything," I said. "Oh, I know," she said. "And for people like you, prayer can be a great comfort." Alan cut in at this point. "We're having a dry run for the wedding," he said. "Ah, I heard the happy news," she said. "I did wonder if you'd left it too long." "No, I was simply waiting for the right man," I said. Thankfully, the organist broke into the trumpet voluntary and Mrs. Number 21 scuttled off to her pew. It was a nice service. After For Those in Peril on the Sea and All Things Bright and Beautiful, Father Timothy gave a very nice sermon on the importance of honesty. We then had the collection and a quick rendition of Onward Christian Soldiers. It's just the sort of service I like. And even Alan piped up in the chorus. Oh, he has a lovely light bass singing voice. But then you expect that from a big man. The only low point for me was when Father Timothy asked us to turn to the person to our left and exchange greetings. I felt excluded, parked as I was in the aisle and unaware of who my neighbour might be, other than Alan, of course, but he was locked in greeting with the man on his left, and I didn't feel it appropriate to reach blindly out into the aisle. It could have been very embarrassing, but for an old man who smelt of mint imperials, who nipped across and shook my hand, I thought he was most gallant. At the end of the service, Mrs. Number 21 was back. "Will we see you again?" she said. "Perhaps," said Alan, by which I took to mean that he hadn't enjoyed things as much as I had hoped. "Only we get a lot of this sort of thing," she said. "Courting couples who take advantage and are then never seen again the minute they're newly wed." I really don't know what I've done to deserve such scorn. I know Mother and Mrs. Number 21 have not seen eye to eye in the past, principally on account of her dog. I did wonder if she was being provoking in the hope that I might report back to Mother and a new round of internecine warfare would break out. "I thought God's house was open to all," I said. "Oh, you haven't taken offence," she said. "It takes more than a gossip to upset me," I said. And as I said this, I felt Father Timothy's hand on my arm, and I felt a bit guilty that he might think my tongue on the sharp side. And Mrs. Number 21 immediately changed tack in his presence. She became quite fawning, as if no nastiness had been exchanged. Alan put his foot in it at this point by asking where the choir was. I saw what he was up to. He can be a man of great principle on occasion, and Father Timothy didn't see the elephant trap and blundered straight in. The curse of the PlayStation, he said. To his credit, Alan didn't pursue as vigorously as he might. He simply commented that they could have spent the money on the ramp, which was less likely to be the subject of the whims of fashion. In truth, I was proud of him for speaking up. It gives me a sense of security when he speaks up for my welfare. Even if it did start me worrying at the impression we were making, I wouldn't want Father Timothy to get the idea that we were a couple of Bolshevik agitators. But it turned out not to be Father Timothy's decision. It had been the work of his predecessor, the Reverend Jim, who had since adopted a missionary position in the Ukraine. Love might be blind, but a wedding needs organising. I heard on the radio that the traditional colour for the older bride was brown, which sparked my interest but not my taste. From the moment Alan proposed, I've had my heart set on a white dress. It's a matter of some controversy, as I'm not officially entitled to claim that colour if I'm strictly truthful to my heart. This is partly because I've been thinking about Father Timothy's sermon on the subject of honesty, which led me to think about ivory. Or cream. But the fact remains that times move on, and really, those shades are for divorcees. This is my first and last wedding, and I can't see why I should feel ashamed to proclaim my devotion in white. It's not as if people don't know that I lived for 6 years with David, and I'm sure they're worldly enough to know that the relationship was more than platonic, and Alan has had his desires fulfilled in the past, and it makes no impact on his clothing choices. It's like Mother says, if you go to the shops at closing, you expect the fruit to be bruised. As for the dress, I've decided upon practical indulgence. The meringue was not an option. I thought if I went down that path, I'd end up looking like something the Spanish wheel around at their festivals. But I did want something special for my big day. Mother knows a dressmaker in Whimsey, and this is where the indulgence kicks in. It's a lovely dress. White silk satin, knee-length, a princess bodice with mother-of-pearl detail. The headdress has a half veil, as the full veil was too difficult for me to keep under control. It is the perfect solution, maintaining the symbolism, but retaining my comfort. Alan joked that a half veil would give me a chance for a fag before the service, which was uncalled for. I haven't smoked since they went past £2 a packet. We've decided that simplicity should be the order of the day. Father Timothy is performing the service, and then it's off to the Tong Liberal Club for a finger buffet and dancing. We had planned on honeymooning in Majorca, but the airline wished to label me as baggage and wanted double insurance in case of accident, though it was the reference to baggage that dissuaded us from booking. I've had this problem with airlines before. They seem to think that in the event of an accident, I will be a health and safety issue, which in my view does not speak very highly for their pilots. Instead, we are taking a short break in the lakes. Though, the main problem is Alan's family. He seems to think we should have a seating plan, which in my opinion goes totally against the spirit of the finger buffet. But it seems his Aunt Vera, if she comes, can be very difficult, and his brother Cliff has a tendency to turn nasty with drink. So despite the possibility of clashes at the buffet, Alan thinks we should assign a seating plan and hope for the best. Of course, this means extra expense. But then Alan dropped another bombshell. He said he could run the place names off on his Hewlett-Packard, which is something I wish he had mentioned before, because we've already shelled out for invitations and printers don't come cheap. As for the day itself, I've booked in to curl up and dye for my hair and makeup. They've given me a special rate because I don't need my eyes doing on account of my glasses. We're getting the flowers from a man Mother knows, Laurie. He does the most fabulous bouquets at rock-bottom prices, and because he's a bit that way, he does a lovely display. Even Mother has been cheerful. I can't think the last time I saw her so happy. Of late, she has been in a distinctly bright mood. The only problem I still have is who will give me away. It might sound daft, but when Alan invited me to his house for dinner, it was the first time that we would have been alone. He assured me he had honourable intentions, which was something that could be taken either way. And just in case, I made an extra effort. I was in the bath for more than an hour. Mother was almost as excited as me. She did my hair and chatted 10 to the dozen. It was she who brought up the subject of my stay in the night. This took me aback. "Don't think I'm being nosy," she said. "I just want to know if I should put the bolt on." She could see how flustered I was, but she did not relent. And it was more information than I needed when she pointed out that I was only just conceived within the wire. And I'm sure she would have continued in this vein had I not asked about the flowers. Her friend Laurie had rung to say he was having trouble with his supply, and would I mind if he used lilies in the bouquet? I most certainly would. It was meant to be a wedding, not a wake. This has been something that's been playing on my mind. So I asked Mother how it was that Laurie managed to undercut the opposition by such a wide margin and still stay in business. Mother said she wasn't an accountant, and that I should be grateful that it offered. But it was still curious that an antique dealer should moonlight as a florist. Of course, Mother had an answer for this too, but it relied on an acceptance that men of his tendency have an artistic flair. It was not entirely convincing. Mother must have made a good job of my hair, because when Alan arrived, he made an audible intake of breath and then began paying me the sort of compliments any woman wants to hear. On the journey to his house, he told me about his day. Between gear changes, he rested his hand on my knee. He's such a sweet man, and I was enjoying the attention. I was glad that I'd followed Mother's advice and worn black underwear. Yes, I know what they say about a girl who wears black undies, but on balance, I was sure I'd struck the right deal, because the only way Alan would find out was if he wooed me nicely. He'd obviously gone to a great deal of trouble. The air was thick with the smell of furniture polish and shaken vac. A smell of Tesco's finest chicken in red wine sauce drifted from the kitchen. Alan placed a glass of chilled white wine in my hand, and Sade on the stereo. We finished the meal in time to curl up on the sofa with Crime Watch. There was an appeal for information about a burglar in Roldan. Alan described the man to me, but I didn't recognise him, thank God. And then suddenly, as if by magic, decision time arrived. 10:30. And for some reason, that Clash song, Should I Stay or Should I Go, popped into my head. It was strange, because I didn't really like that song. I was more into Grease. And if I'd had any say in the matter, I would have liked to have been Stockard Channing. I sensed Alan picked up on my prevarication. "What you doing then?" he said. The Rubicon stretched before me. But rather than make a decision, I threaded my fingers through his and bit the inside of my lip. What I wanted to say was, I'd love to stay, but it had been that long since I'd been intimate with a man. I hadn't the confidence to speak. And perhaps the decision would have been easier if Alan had showed more passion during the evening. I did wonder if he found Mother an aphrodisiac, because all night he'd been nothing but the perfect gentleman. And just at the point when I was sure I would be spending the night in my own bed, a little voice slipped from my throat, and I said I was staying. "Great," he said, "I can have a drink."